And you know what that means. That's right. It's 1930 UTC, where you live. My name's Tobe, and this is the Dubious Goals Committee. You're listening to Anon Radio, and I salute you for that. Obviously, you know better than most people. And now I know you're all asking me, hey, Tobe, what's on the agenda today? Well, let's take a look here. Aha, it says no parking. Oh, boy. Are you going to get a weird story? But first, there's going to be a little backstory. You know me. You've been listening to me long enough. You know the shenanigans I get up to. And I like to hack stuff. And when I say hack stuff, I don't mean being a computer hacker and breaking into banks and all that fake stuff that we've learned from TV and the movies. But I do like to improve things. I do like to make things better. And sometimes I like to test the boundaries of my control. Meaning, well, that I'm not necessarily a control freak. You know, the world can go to hell in a handbasket as far as I'm concerned. But I do like to know what I can and cannot control if it ever comes down to it. And so, you know, when it comes to doing things with telephones, and these are good things to know, and doing certain things with computers, this is good things to know. You never know when you're going to need to do something. A lot of people ask me, well, how did you ever get this mentality? You know, and I don't know. But I've had it all my life. Even as a child, I was always trying to hack something, or trying to socially engineer something, or do any of that kind of weird stuff. And this is a story from my childhood. As you may or may not remember, I was born on the banks of the Olentangy River, not here in Omaha, but I moved to Omaha with my mom and dad when I was 18 months old. And the house that we first moved into was in an old neighborhood in the middle of town. It's kind of a regentrified place today. And it was real nice when we lived there too, don't get me wrong. And we lived in this house, a bunch of people. It was a neighborhood and everybody knew everybody back in the day. Okay, I can't give you an actual date, otherwise I might give away my own age. Even though I'm sure most of you already know that I'm 1,500 years old. But anyway, I was a kid. I was a little kid. So back when I was a tiny little kid, when we lived on Davenport Street, one day, I don't even remember how I got this idea or why I wanted to do this, but this is one of those, you know, let's just see what I can control and what I can't control. And this is at the age of 4 years old. Okay, so here I am, 4 years old, and I'm sitting around going, what am I gonna do today? And I decided, for whatever reason, to make a no parking sign. I learned to read at an extraordinarily young age. I don't ever remember a time when I couldn't read, and I can remember a long way back. And yeah, like I said, I don't know how I got this idea, but you know, I could always read signs, and I was always reading signs. And if you could talk to my grandfather today, he would tell you stories about how driving around, that I would never shut up. I would just read out loud every single sign that I saw, you know, and at the age of 5, just crazy. And I imagine that was annoying as hell, but my grandfather also found me to be strangely entertaining. He could never figure out what I was up to, but he was always curious to watch me. But anyway, regardless, so here I am sitting in the house on Davenport Street, and I got some paper from my dad. We always had tons of scratch paper because being a professor of organic chemistry, you're giving a lot of people tests and quizzes every week, and you end up with extras, so there's lots of scratch paper. Yes, there's an organic chemistry quiz on one side, but the back side is blank, and it's perfectly good for making no parking signs. So I had got me a piece of paper, and I was sitting at a table, and I was trying to find a red crayon or a red magic marker, and I couldn't find one. I just couldn't get my hands on one or something, and I was forced to use a pencil. So I made myself a sign on the piece of paper and made it look as good as as I could, trying to make it look exactly like a real no parking sign. But, you know, I'm a four-year-old kid with a pencil and a piece of paper. How accurate is it going to look? So I wrote on, you know, I drew the outline of the sign, and on the inside of the sign, I wrote no parking. And I kind of needed to get some help on the spelling of parking. And back then, I didn't make my N's correctly. I always made my N's backwards, which would probably endear me to Russian-speaking people. Even the lowercase N's I would make backwards. That didn't get straightened out until I was like in first grade. But anyway, I made this sign. It said no parking on one line, and it was horribly kerned because I didn't have any idea what kerning was when I was 4 years old, and neither does any other four-year-old. So it sort of said no parking, and the parking kind of got smaller and had to bend around the corner a little bit so it wouldn't go off the edge of the sign. And then, you know, I had no problem fitting in any time underneath. So, you know, I've got this sign that looks like a lot of the signs in my neighborhood, except it's not red and it's not metal, but it says no parking anytime, and I wrote it in mixed case, you know, of course. But there, I finally got it done, and you know, and it seems like it took me forever, you know, because when you're a little kid, geez, if you're doing something for 15 minutes, it's forever. And I'm thinking that this must have happened on a weekend, on a Saturday or a Sunday, because my dad was home, not at the university. And so after I got the sign done, I went and found my dad, and somehow, and I'm not sure how I managed to do it, but I managed to convince him that we needed to put this up outside. And we had two trees, or at least one tree, in front of our house that was kind of on the little space between the sidewalk and the street. And I thought this was going to be a perfect place for it. And because, you know, I'm, you know, 4 years old and I'm only 2 feet tall at best, I was a little kid, I couldn't get the sign up high enough. You know, those signs are, you know, what, they're like 6 or 8 feet high, right? So I had to have my dad help me with this. And I basically gave him directions, and he nailed this paper sign to the tree using galvanized roofing nails. And don't ask me why I had galvanized roofing nails all the time. It had to do with the school I went to. We had two kinds of nails at the school I went to. Those like 1-inch galvanized. This is beside the point. Anyway, so my dad tacks the sign up, and I'm thinking, oh, this is great. This is just perfect. I can't wait to see somebody pull up and try to park and then see the sign and, oh, nope, no parking, I can't park here. Well, obviously this didn't happen for a while. And I should mention that this is one of those streets that's in an older part of town that the houses, most of the houses didn't have driveways or garages. And so there was a lot of street parking. Our house didn't have a garage, or did it? Or if it did, it didn't have a driveway or anything. I remember my dad having to park his Mustang on the street all the time. Yes, my dad, the family car at that time in my family was a 1964 and a half Mustang. And yes, it was badass. So, me and my dad and my mom probably were sitting out on the porch just, you know, enjoying the day when one of the neighbors did, in fact, finally pull up. And he pulled up and he parked and he got out. And in my mind, I'm remembering that this was a man by the name of Carl DeVos. Although, I was going to say, was it Dennis Pingle? No, I think it was before that. But this was when I was much younger. So this guy gets out of his car, and then he notices the sign, and he goes up, and, you know, he can't read it from where he's standing because it's pencil on paper. So he goes up to it and reads it, and it says no parking anytime. And he comes up halfway up our walk, and I'm just, you know, about to explode. I'm just dying. Because I'm thinking, uh-oh, here we go. This is going to work. And this guy asks my dad, hey, can I park here? That sign says no parking. Can I park? Is that for real? Or is that, you know, and he wasn't asking if it was a real sign. He was just sort of asking my dad if this space was reserved for whatever reason, although, you know, you really can't do that. You know, the neighbor was thinking, oh, are you waiting for somebody to show up? Or, you know, are you going to load something? It was something like that. My dad's saying, no, go ahead and park there. That's just Tob doing his thing, messing around. But you couldn't convince me otherwise. At 4 years old, I was utterly and completely convinced that my no parking sign was so realistic and so good that it worked. And it made somebody question whether or not they could park there. And that's when I knew I was all powerful. That's when I knew. That's when people watching me should have known, uh-oh, we got a problem with this kid. This kid's gonna grow up to be some kind of hacker. And look at what happened. It's true. I did. Oh, and every time I think of this memory, I laugh to myself because I was dying. I was rolling on, you know, the sidewalk, curled up in a ball, holding my gut, laughing so hard because I thought the guy bought it. And, you know, I couldn't be convinced otherwise. My dad tried to tell me, no, he was just asking if, and I'm like, no, I get it. Bye! And I just was dying. And so, that was probably the first of my sign hacks. You know, to this day, I do like to put up signs. I don't usually put up traffic signs or anything like that. I put up weird, like, fake estate sale signs and garage sale signs. I don't even want to talk about some of the last few signs I've put up, but they're just absolutely horrible. But anyway, to this day, I love making weird signs and putting them up and causing confusion. Later in life, when I was in high school, I was reading a lot of Robert Anton Wilson books. And there was a character in one of his books, his name was Markov Chaney, and he liked to put up confusing signs just to confuse people, make people question their own sanity. Real life hacking through signage. Oh, it's always a good time. But I don't have any more sign stories for right now, at least any ones that I'm comfortable telling you. So let's go ahead and play some music.
Artificial flavors all around you.
Crumble. See, I just wish for bliss in this life that I'm leading, but I'm dreaming. Now the demon's feeding and eating off of position. Take it only under the advice of a physician. Delicious but pernicious, so it ain't no friend of mine. Flavor's artificial, but the cat's is genuine. As the cells swell like a wrist and a razor, inhale the breeze of CFCs through my nasal passages, ravages and contamination. Instant death, the choice of a new generation. Artificial flavors all around you.
Most joyous celebration! Coordinated jumping! They're like a string of My Little Ponies vaulting over a rainbow! Friendship is magic!
Welcome back. You are still listening to Anon Radio, and this is the Dubious Goals Committee. I'm Tobe, I'm your host, and just a general weirdo. Earlier in the show, we were discussing one of my childhood hacks. And I thought, okay, well, I guess this is as good a time as any to talk about another one. This one came a little bit later in my life. Let's jump forward in time about 8 years. When I entered seventh grade on the first day of school, I saw that, oh my God, we have computers in this school. Wow. When I got home that night, my dad got home, sat down to dinner. I'm like, Dad, you're not going to believe it. We got computers in school. You're not going to believe these things. Because, you know, the only computers I had seen up until that time were, you know, mainframes, big old boxes that look like air conditioners, you know, or a dehumidifier. Have you ever noticed how a PDP-11, or is it a PDP-10, looks like a dehumidifier? Anyway. So I got heavily into computers. And to the extent where I managed to convince my dad to buy one, even though I really didn't convince him, he was probably going to get one anyway. And this was back when the Apple IIs came out, right? So this is now the King Daddy computer, and it's cheap, you know, relatively. And it turns out that my school had about half a dozen of them hidden away. There was three in one room, and there was one in an office, and there was a couple more down in the computer room with some other stuff. So, I spent all my waking hours working on computers and learning Apple Basic, which I can still program in like a god. Yeah, can't do anything in C, but give me an Apple II, and I'll make it do stuff that you couldn't imagine. Well, gee, Tobe, the times sure have passed you by. Yeah, have they? Well, take your UTF-8 and shove it up your ASCII. And by this time in my life, I was also heavily into other types of secret information. I studied magic, and I wanted to be a con man, and all these other types of things. You know my mentality. You've known me long enough. You know what's going on in the old Tobster brain at any given time. It's either chicks, hacks, cats, or tea. I mean, come on. I'm a very, very simple man with extraordinarily complex tastes. Regardless, So it came to pass that I was in seventh grade, and I started getting really good on the computers, and I had learned some very, very interesting tricks using ASCII codes and the input side of things. And at around the same time, my dad, who is an avid model railroader, as you know, he gave me an old, I don't know how to describe it. It's not a Fresnel or a bezel. Yeah, I guess they call it a bezel or a Fresnel. It's a lens that goes over an analog light bulb to make it a colored light on a control panel. This is before we had LEDs, right? And so my dad gave me this thing. I'm like, oh, what am I going to do with this? It's so cool. It looks like a green emerald jewel. It's cut and so I got a box. I got a plastic box and I mounted this thing in a box. And I put a switch on it, and I put a light bulb and some batteries in the box, and I turn it on and off, and okay, yeah, great, I got a green light. And then I had a brilliant idea, or devious, terrible idea, depending on whose side you're on. So I drilled a hole in the side of the box, and I inserted a length of wire about 5 feet long, and so this thing looked like a cord or something. There was nothing on the other end of it. There was no plug or anything terminated. It's just this empty, this blank slate of a cord, if you will. It wasn't intended to be plugged into anything because the idea I had was this. I'm going to take this to school and I'm going to run this cable behind a computer so it looks like it's in a computer. If anybody actually looks back there, they're going to see that it's not connected, but you know, being as all the computers are pushed up against the wall, nobody's going to pull a computer out to see this. So, my plan was, this is a con. I would tell people that this device I've built is a coin scanner, like the kind they use in banks to count change. And this is not what they use in banks to count change, if you've ever seen a coin counter. And so I was going to tell people, yeah, all you got to do is hold the coin right up above this green light, and it'll scan it, and the computer will tell you what denomination it is. And if it gets it wrong, I'll pay you the same amount as that coin, but if it gets it right, you give me your coin. So this is a wager that I was hoping to make with people, because they would think, oh, Tobe, he's dumb. He can't make a coin scanner or anything. And this doesn't even look like a scanner. It's just a green light with a switch. You turn the green light on and you hold a quarter over it, okay? And this is supposed to be a coin scanner. And now here's how the scam worked. I actually just wrote a computer program that looked like it's scanning. You know, it would say scanning, if it would wait for 2 seconds, and then it would kick up what the coin is. And of course, like I said, it's not really scanning anything. The program itself was fake. What I did was I wrote a program that looked like it was just sitting in RAM. And back in the day, if you wanted to run a program, you would type run at the prompt and it would just run the program that's in the RAM. Okay. But what I did was I wrote a program that was already running and it gave a fake prompt and a fake cursor. And so what you would do is when you saw what coin the person was holding, you know, you would type, instead of typing run to run the program, you would type Q for quarter and N for nickel and D for dime and H for half dollar and S for silver dollar or P for penny. And then you could type any other letters and it didn't matter. But what you typed did not come up on screen. When you hit a letter, the word run would come up. So you'd type, you know, Q for quarter, but R would come up on screen. Then you could type any other keys and they would type out UN on the screen and you hit enter, which was also fake, and it makes it look like the computer program is running. It's not, it's already running, and all you did was tell it what coin the guy was holding. A complete scam. Well, the day came that I had the computer program all finished and running perfectly, and I took the box to school and I set it up in one of the computer rooms next to a computer with the little cord going behind the computer so it looked like it was hooked up. And we went right up I went right up to the smartest teacher we had, who was our media center guy. He was the librarian, but he was also the guy kicking down the information on how to run these computers, because there was like 5 kids in the whole school who gave a crap about the things. But anyway, so I get this guy. His name was Mr. McIntyre. He ended up being our computer guy up in our high school too, but that's another story. I call him over and I go, check this out. I built this coin scanner and I hooked it up to this computer. Take a coin out of your pocket. And if my coin scanner can't predict or can't read what coin you have, I'll pay you that amount. But if it does, you give me that coin. And he's like, well, that sounds like gambling. We can't do gambling here in school, blah, blah, blah. But I got him to take a coin out of his pocket and hold it over the little green light while I typed run on the computer. And he was amazed. It worked. It came up quarter. He tried it with other coins. He's like, this is great. You did a really good job. But where did you get this thing? And I was like, I got it out of a surplus catalog, and then I just put it in a Radio Shack box. Yes, my con failed because it was apparently too believable that a 12-year-old kid could build a coin scanner and hook it up to a computer and interface this to make it actually work. I tried this on multiple other people, but they wouldn't bet me because apparently it looked too realistic. It was too believable that this thing was an actual coin scanner. I showed it to everybody I knew. They all bought it. Every single one of them. I made no money whatsoever out of this brilliant con that I had come up with. And the reason it didn't work is because the box was too believable. What did I learn from this? What lesson did I take away on that day? A very valuable one, and that is this. Don't build anything too good, otherwise people won't believe that you made it. This happened a number of times in my lifetime up until I was about 18, when then suddenly people could start believing that I could make these things. But you know, I was boxing all through junior high and high school, and I'd build these devices and people say, oh, you didn't make that, you bought that. Really? Where are you gonna buy one of these things? You know, what store? It was always just too good. And that's why I never could really con anybody with any of my stuff. And so that was another childhood hack that was a little bit too good. It went awry. Eventually, I spilled the beans to Mr. McIntyre, our computer guy, and I showed him how, you know, the computer programs work, and he actually thought that was more brilliant than building a coin scanner. So I say, wow, you're a devious little monkey, aren't you? Yes, I am. Oh, my life, I tell you, it's been weird. You know, and I would love to sit here and tell you some more stories about my failed childhood hacks, but I'm afraid that I'm running out of time, because if you glance over at your clock, you'll notice that it is creeping up on 20 o'clock UTC, which means my time here today is up. This has been the Dubious Goals Committee, which airs every day at 1930 UTC, so be sure to tune in tomorrow and every day for the rest of your life. My name is Tobe. I've been your host, but now I'm out of here. So, bye, 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 bye.
This is the end of the line for me. The end of the line, yes.
I wasn't used to this controller.
Yeah, that's all I had.
Where I was holding it. It was a little bit unnerving.
Yeah.
But it was fun, yeah. You know.